This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of October 2019. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Overcrowded Metro Rapid buses and Capital Metro's plans for the future.
One of the things that definitely means is that we need to find ways to improve that service even more.
What the word equity means when talking about Austin ISD's proposed school closures.
Having a new building for underprivileged kids, it sounds nice in theory, but I think it's more of a representation of equality as opposed to equity.
After 80 years in business, Hutz Hamburgers is closing Sunday evening.
I'm 65 in or 38 years, and I'm just ready, you know.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. Austin is reinstating limited bans on camping and resting in public. The Austin City Council debated this for hours last night and then approved the new rules 7-4. KUT's Andrew Weber was watching the whole thing unfold. Hello, Andrew.
Hi there, Nathan.
So just quick background on this. As you know, over the summer, the Austin City Council relaxed its rules on camping and sitting and lying in certain public spaces. Supporters said they were trying to decriminalize homelessness by reducing the fines that people face by breaking the rules, which often went unpaid and then could get in the way of them finding a home. In relaxing the rules, homelessness became more visible in the city. People who had been camping in wooded areas, less visible spaces, came out in public. There was a backlash over this. Governor Abbott had even threatened to intervene, and he's out with a new statement today, which we will get to in a moment. But Andrew, what are the new rules?
The new rules ban camping on sidewalks, on all sidewalks, and camping or sitting or lying down within 15 feet of a home or an operating business, so a business that's open. It will also be banned outside of city shelters, including the Arch and including any future shelter outside of the downtown area, in addition to in areas at risk of wildfire. Those are the specifics. There are a handful of amendments that were going to be folded into this ordinance that City Council decided could be administratively rolled into enforcement and in sort of regulations of, say, specific roads that could be dangerous. The city would then prohibit people from camping from, but not in such a prescriptive way that it would be in city code.
So they'd be leaving it essentially up to the people who work at the Austin Transportation Department to come up with areas where it would be nuts.
Where it would be dangerous, yes. And in that case, the Transportation Department would work with City Manager Spencer Kronk in his office.
Some of the most visible camping areas have been under roadways along Ben White, for example. What about those?
So that is part of that discretion as it relates to administrative rules and rulemaking. That was a specific example that Councilmember Ann Kitchen brought up a lot. She wanted to prohibit camping on medians that had a U-turn right there because there's obviously that's very close to traffic. And specifically because she wanted to get folks away from the camp at Ben White and Manchac. It should be noted that she also suggested that it was okay to camp at the area just west of there, sort of toward Lamar, which is a sort of larger, flatter median. She suggested that would be fine, but that the proximity to a median would be more dangerous and that she wanted that specific requirement in the ordinance. She wanted it on the books.
What about the original justification for relaxing the camping rules in the first place, that people who have nowhere to live will be fined and that will get in the way of them finding a place to live?
So there were two visions of how the city should revise this ordinance. And both took, I will say, pretty painstaking measures to codify that police should, at every turn, find an opportunity to get somebody, move them somewhere else, or find them somebody who can help move them somewhere else, provide them with advice on where to camp legally, and avoid ticketing folks at all costs. Having said that, even in the last couple of years, these tickets were at a certain point given out, I think around 3,000 were given out in 2015 compared to around 300 last year. So APD hasn't been enforcing this as much over the last couple of years because they've noticed that these tickets go unpaid and it's one of those things where it's a sort of community policing effort.
Speaking of Austin police, the chief, Brian Manley, was up before council a lot yesterday, answering questions, giving his input. What did he have to say about crime since the camping ban was relaxed over the summer?
The department did an analysis between June and September of violent and property crime in the downtown area and found overall there was an increase in both subsets. It was examined from the standpoint of whether a suspect or a victim was homeless and found that it was more likely that the biggest increases were in cases in which the victim was homeless and the suspect was not homeless. Council members also asked Chief Manley if there was a public safety crisis, something that's been a talking point of the governor. He said it's not a matter of necessarily public safety as it is a matter of public order. He didn't characterize it as a crisis, and he said the numbers don't bear that out.
Now, Governor Abbott had issued a deadline of November 1st saying he would unleash the resources of the state in Austin if the city council didn't take the kinds of actions he was looking for. What is he saying today after this vote by the city council last night?
Governor Abbott's office came out with a statement today that said that the governor would ask TxDOT to clean up homeless camps under bridges, which it should be noted was something that TxDOT previously did. They stopped as a sort of cost-saving measure is how they framed it to the city. So now the city took that over in May, and it's a little over 60 underpasses throughout Austin.
Those are areas where people could perhaps still be allowed to camp, depending on what the transportation department says?
Potentially, yes.
Is Governor Abbott still threatening to unleash the power of the state in the city of Austin?
Yes and no. He did suggest that DPS could help with UTPD at state-owned facilities to provide, I believe he phrased it as, ensure security. He also said that the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality is going to monitor E. coli levels in Austin creeks. And he also suggested that he was going to work with shelters in Austin, but it wasn't really clear on how he would do that or what that necessarily means.
What was Mayor Adler's response to this latest statement from the governor?
Mayor Adler welcomed the help, as he phrased it. He's been sort of wont to phrase it in that manner. If there is somewhere for these folks to go, if the state decides to move people from under bridges, he would like them to have a place to go. And it wasn't necessarily clear if that's going to be the case. But he said if that is the case, totally fine. He totally accepts the help.
That's KUT's Andrew Weber. You can read his full story about this with a lot of details about Austin reinstating limited bans on camping and resting in public at KUT.org. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Nathan.
Capital Metro reported another increase in passengers last month on its Metro Rapid lines. Now, those are the lines that feature limited stops along their routes. This increase in ridership is coming at a time when Capital Metro is proposing an expansion of the service. There are two lines right now. They want to grow it to seven lines. This is part of the big Project Connect plan. KUT Samuel King reports the agency is giving riders the chance to weigh in about those plans.
The vision for new Metro Rapid service in Austin could be seen at the Central Library last month, and college student Grace McDonald decided to check it out for herself.
I saw a sheet of paper on the librarian's desk mentioning this meeting. I was like, oh, hey, I've been wanting to go to one of these for a while.
McDonald is a frequent transit user. She says while the current Metro Rapid service works well, there is room for improvement. Ridership on the existing lines, the 801 and the 803, surged by 40,000 riders in September, and crowding has become an issue during rush hours.
I was on the 801 the other day, and standing room only, which is great. It means that there are people riding it. But it was also standing room only for almost the entire trip.
Now approaching Lavaca at 3rd. Republic Square Station.
Cab Metro officials have been working to adjust spacing and capacity on the lines, adding buses as needed to meet the demand. The lessons learned from the growth on the existing lines, which cross through the heart of Austin, will be important as the agency seeks to expand the Metro Rapid service.
There are seven of them that are on the map, everything from a line heading down Burnett and Saint-Lamar out towards Oak Hill and Manchac, other ones heading out Maynard and Keaton towards the Expo Center.
Capital Metro's Jacob Calhoun is a long-range planner on the Project Connect team.
One of the things that definitely means is that we need to find ways to improve that service even more. And so that means, do we need to look at how we move it? Is there ways to kind of get some better signals that allow us to move the service faster? Can we get people on and off the service faster?
The Metro Rapid expansion is another piece of the Project Connect plan. The buses would complement the centerpiece lines, the Orange Line, which would run in the Guadalupe-Lamar and South Congress corridors, and the Blue Line, which would run from near the UT campus through downtown and out to the airport. Jackie Nierenberg is Cap Metro's Community Engagement Director.
So we're adding layers of access to the system to create one big seamless system that people can use, ideally easier than driving a car. Once that happens, people say, oh, I get it now.
Right now, it's unclear whether the blue and orange lines will be light rail or bus rapid transit or some combination of the two. Cap Metro and city leaders will decide that soon. Either way, they would have their own dedicated lanes or transit ways along their entire routes. The new Metro Rapid lines would have to mostly mix with existing traffic. Austinite Matthew Novacek says that might be a tough sell if it still takes too long to take the bus compared to taking a car.
That's probably the big one, is the bus, you know, gets caught up in traffic but still stops. And so, yeah, so I was kind of hoping to see a little bit more improvement in that area to kind of improve these lines.
On the other hand, Cap Metro's Nierenberg says there's lower startup costs and fewer obstacles to launching the Metro Rapid service. That's because acquiring the equipment and building the infrastructure for the transit ways for the blue or orange lines would take more time if Project Connect moves forward.
The Metro Rapid lines are relatively easy to implement, working with the city to get the priority treatments. We're talking about maybe 2 to 3 years. It's definitely the low-hanging fruit, the easy win, and we're excited about that.
In the meantime, Grace McDonald feels Cap Metro should shore up its existing services in terms of scheduling and reliability before launching more.
Limited stop buses, I think, honestly, in terms of a long-term plan, yeah, sure. But I think that they need to focus more on their frequent stop buses, like the 7 and the 10 and the 30.
Cap Metro has more Project Connect open houses planned for next month, and they're taking input on the Metro Rapid proposals online, too. It's all ahead of an expected vote on a transportation bond issue in November 2020. Samuel King, KUT News.
The number of Texans who have been prescribed CBD oil derived from cannabis has almost doubled this year. This is different than the CBD oil that is made from hemp because it can have a slightly higher percentage of THC, up to 0.5%, and it's made with marijuana instead of hemp. The lawmakers made a lot more conditions eligible for treatment earlier this year during the legislative session. But as KUT's Jerry Quijano reports, the Texas Department of Public Safety is no longer accepting new applications for dispensaries to produce and sell the oil.
DPS opened the month-long application period for new dispensaries at the beginning of October, but just 9 days later, the department says it's suspending the licensing process for the Texas Compassionate Use Program. In a statement, DPS says it will continue to monitor, quote, dispensing capacity requirements along with the need for any additional licenses, end quote. In June, state lawmakers expanded the list of conditions eligible for participation in the state's Compassionate Use Program, and DPS initially opened the application process because of an expected increase in demand for CBD oil derived from medical marijuana. Currently, there are only 3 licensed dispensaries in Texas. Jerry Quijano, KUT News.
People keep moving to the Austin area, not just the city limits, the whole region, and sales of single-family homes keep going up. As KUT's Jimmy Moss reports, September home sales, like the temperatures last month, stayed hot.
Home sales hit a few records in September. The median price of a home in the city of Austin hit its highest mark last month at $406,000. That's according to data from the Austin Board of Realtors. That means half the homes in the city sold for more than $406,000. One major reason is there's a low number of houses to buy. The measure of that, days of inventory, shrank by 4 days in September to just over 5 weeks. Broadening out to the 5-county area, more than 2,600 homes were sold last month, a record for September. The median home price for all of Travis, Hayes, Williamson, Bastrop, and Caldwell counties is $320,000. Jimmy Moss, KUT News.
The city of Austin says toxic blue-green algae is still being detected in Lady Bird Lake. KUT's Dalia Jones tells us what will eventually get rid of it.
Since July, neurotoxins have been detected in the algae. A recent sample test from the city confirmed that there were still low levels left in Lady Bird Lake. And according to the Watershed Protection Department, there needs to be consistent cool temperatures and an increase in water flow before that changes. The algae is most common in late summer and early fall, but there hasn't been any known harmful toxins until this year, when at least five dogs died after swimming in Lady Bird Lake. The city says people should avoid the algae and should keep pets away from it as well. Dalia Jones, KUT News.
It was just last month that the Austin School District announced its plans to overhaul the city's schools, including closing 12 of them. And since then, the word equity has been used a lot. The district says its plans create more equity in schools, but a lot of people disagree. KUT's Claire McInerney looks into the different conversations happening around equity by starting with a definition.
It's not equality, which is giving every child the same opportunities, whether it's teachers, supplies, or programs. If things are equal, every student has the exact same thing. Equity is more nuanced. It means not every child gets the same resources because not every child needs the same stuff. So typically, children from low-income homes or English learners or who are homeless or having a learning disability all need more when it comes to their education. So the idea of equity suggests some students get more, some get less, to get them all to the same goal, whether that's reading by a certain grade or high school graduation. So why are we talking about this now? When the idea of closing schools started, the school board said it wanted to make sure these changes were equitable. The first page of the proposal repeats that. Stephanie Hawley, the district's new chief equity officer, is in charge of overseeing equity in all the district's policies. A few days after the proposal was released, she told the board at a work session that the goal of this plan is to move AISD toward equity for all students.
Because we inherited a system that doesn't cause us to question what we're doing to children. And so our hope is with this work that we can begin anew and we can set an example for this region as to how we start to undo the racism that's doing so much damage to Black and brown children.
But many disagreed that this plan does that. And this disagreement has launched a conflict between the district and the community. If we ask the question, who are these closings meant to benefit? There are two very different points of view. When the proposal came out, one of the first details many people noticed was that most of the closures would happen east of I-35. That concerned some critics of the proposal. They say it feels like the district is once again punishing the neighborhoods where Black and Latino families have lived and sent their kids to school. But Superintendent Paul Cruz said they chose those schools on purpose because when they close a school, they're going to combine it with another school community and build them a brand new building. And Cruz said the district wants to give the new buildings to those communities of color that have historically not gotten investments from AISD.
Having a new building for underprivileged kids, it sounds nice in theory, but I think it's more of a representation of equality as opposed to equity.
That's Ricky Lowe, a research associate for the Institute for Urban Policy and Research Analysis at the University of Texas. He's studied school closures around the country.
Because, yes, it's going to be nice. It's going to look modernized. It's going to have maybe all of the trimmings that the school across town is going to have. But what about the actual programs? What about the teachers that are going to be there?
That sentiment is also being echoed by parents. They'd like to see more academic programs, not just a shiny new building. Candace Hunter is a former teacher, and she's taught at mostly low-income schools in AISD. But she sent her kids to Maplewood Elementary, which is the opposite. Even though Maplewood is suggested for closure, she's more worried about the equity around closing other schools on the list. For example, consolidating Webb and Dobie Middle Schools. Both have mostly low-income students and high numbers of English learners.
We know that you're just doubling the problems.
She said if this consolidation came with a promise to provide instructional coaches for every subject at every grade level, as well as only hiring master teachers for the campus, then this consolidation might work.
That promise, I say go ahead and do it. It's a fantastic idea. But without that promise, we're just creating another situation that we already have in the district.
Hunter says she's not opposed to school consolidations. She just thinks some of these scenarios should be more planned out, so it's clear the change will not harm the students. And if closures do end up happening, she says for schools like Maplewood, Ridgetop, and Pease, where students come from more affluent families, it's equitable for these families to shoulder the burden.
I think, especially for the Maplewood contingent, we're giving up the least. I really do believe we are giving up the least. We're moving. But for some schools, the consolidation will overburden the teachers. It will overburden the parents. It will literally shock the students. And I really think that's where our focus should be right now. Not that it's an inconvenience that I have to drive one more mile.
But nothing is official quite yet. And Holly, the chief equity officer for AISD, says the district is currently revising and plans to put out a new version of the proposal. And she says it'll hopefully look different. She admits that the first version was written without equity in the school district's history at the forefront. And she says if her training is working, version two will reflect that.
That proposal will tell you where we are. The proposal right now tells you where we were in August. And version two is going to tell you a couple of things. Where we've progressed, where we've listened to the community, where our trustees have grown and listened to the community. And that document will be the living evidence of whether or not people really have committed.
The district is expected to release the second version of the proposal by early November. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
A small but growing number of Republican state lawmakers are breaking their silence to condemn remarks by House Speaker Dennis Bonin, remarks that were surreptitiously recorded by conservative activist Michael Quinn Sullivan of the group Empower Texans months ago and released to the public this week. It's an hour-long recording. At the core of this issue is Bonin asking Empower Texans to target some Republicans in their primaries. And in exchange, Bonin says, hey, I'll give Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard media credentials for the House floor. Over the past week, reaction has been coming in from Republican House members. Of course, Democrats, too, who condemn this. But Republicans now control the Texas House, so that's why we're focusing on their reaction. Retiring Republican Jonathan Stickland from Bedford, who was among the first to call for Bonin's resignation after news of the conversation came out, tweeted two words in all caps, told ya. Now, he's retiring, but we've also heard from State Representative Tony Tinderholt, Republican of Arlington, calling on Bonin to resign, saying, quote, the written transcript reveals that our speaker deliberately lies on repeated occasion to members of the Texas House, the media, and every Texan, end quote. We've also heard calls for Bonin to resign from Republican State Representatives Tan Parker of Flower Mound, Trent Ashby of Lufkin, Matt Schaefer of Tyler, Kyle Biederman of Fredericksburg, about 14 or so members. So is all of this enough to force Bonin to step down? KUT's Ben Philpott has been covering the Texas legislature for years. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
I think a lot of people listening to this are probably thinking, why do I even need to care who the Speaker of the Texas House is? Can you just help us understand why this is such a big issue?
The important thing there is that they are in charge of the agenda, essentially, for the House. Now, different House members have said, oh, no, I let more of the members set the pace and the tone of a session. Others have been a little more heavy-handed. But the point is that if a speaker wants to, they have the tools as the speaker to block different kinds of bills from coming to the floor of the House. They can push forward some bills. They can kill other bills. That is the power of the Speaker of the House.
Very powerful position indeed. Is there going to be enough momentum to force Bonin to step down?
See, this is why I think you had me on, because a couple of days ago, I think I said, no way will he resign. So now I'm going to come on and say, you know, I mean, if pressure builds, certainly could. I still think that this is something that most people don't have on their radar. This is still something that people may hear about it, but they're like, well, wait a minute, what does the speaker do? How does this bother me? The next legislative session isn't until 2021. So what are we talking about? And making a public show of force to get a sitting speaker to resign always has the opportunity to get more people interested and more people wondering what is going on with the Republican Party that this is happening. But yes, I think if more and more lawmakers, you said up to about 14 or so now, you know, if we get up to 20, 30, 40, I mean, it could be something where Speaker Bonin does have to decide, you know what, there's no reason for me to hang around until December of 2020 after the next election to figure out whether or not I can be Speaker again. Maybe I should just go ahead and step down now.
What kinds of pressure points should we be looking for? Are any of these state lawmakers who've called on Bonin to resign in his inner circle of power?
There are a couple of committee chairs. I believe Schaefer is a committee chair. Schaefer, who of course used to be part of the Freedom Caucus, which is a more right-wing version of Republicans within the Texas House. Although he left that group this past session and became a chair for Speaker Bonin on one of the committees in the House. So I think more chairs coming out, but maybe more of the ones that are more established Republicans have been with the Speaker and with the previous Speaker, Joe Strauss, you know, that were both within both of their inner circles. I think also you've got to see what kind of statewide elected official reaction we get. Lieutenant Governor Patrick, in his initial statement on this, said absolutely nothing. He said, the tape has been released. I wanted it released, and an investigation is ongoing. And that was it. I mean, he literally had no opinion on anything that was said in the tape. Now, if you start to get someone like the Lieutenant Governor or Governor Abbott to say things like, this doesn't look good, this hurts our party, this hurts the state, then that's the kind of pressure that could do more than a handful of state House members calling on Bonin to quit.
KUT's Ben Philpott joining us to talk about a small but growing number of Republican state representatives in the Texas House calling for the resignation of House Speaker Dennis Bonin. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Burgers are sizzling today on the flat top at Hut's Hamburgers on West 6th Street. The dining area is packed, and the line is out the door.
Because they're closing and it's tragic and we have to get our fix one last time.
Yes, the local restaurant that's been open for 80 years closes forever on Sunday evening. Olivia Baker works across the street.
What's your fix?
Huge basket of onion rings. And I don't know what burger I'm going to get. Maybe the one with the pineapple on it that I love. But I always get something different.
It's just you're just recording, right? There's no camera in there,
right? Just audio. I'm an audio guy.
I got a chance today to speak to the owner of Hut's.
What's your name, sir?
Mike Hutchinson.
Mike Hutchinson, but they call you?
Hutch.
Is this restaurant named after you?
No, it's not, actually. It was started by Homer Hudson in 1939, and we purchased the business in 1981. My last name's Hutchinson. Everybody gets that mixed up. It's just one of life's ironies, you know. Our name's so similar. I've been here 38 years. So.
38 years?
Yes.
It's a long time.
Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't seem that long, though.
Why close it?
Well, first I want to say it has nothing to do with my landlord. My landlord's been more than fair with me. I have no issue with my landlord. The taxes, the property taxes have been high. Staffing issues, you know, that's just everybody is having right now.
Hard to find people?
Yeah, hard to find good people. And there's a lot of restaurants in this town, so... And it's, you know, I'm 65, been here 38 years, and I'm just ready, you know. And we have a location at the airport, so we still have a presence here in Austin, so.
Are you going to be working there yourself?
It's more of a licensing thing, you know. I do go out there and meet with those people and that are running it, and they're doing a really good job, and I'll be out there, but not on a regular basis.
You must have been contemplating the 38 years as you come to the 20th of October when you all are going to be closing right. down. What are some of the memories that stand out to you?
Well, lately, the thing is, I knew this because I've seen it myself, where kids were coming in when they're, 3 and 4 years old. Now they're coming in with their families. It's really heartwarming. You know, and we've met a lot of people over the years. A lot of, celebrities have come through here. Matthew McConaughey used to come through here when he was in college, and... He dated one of the girls who worked for us. And one of the funny stories is Dennis Quaid claims he fell in love with Meg Ryan here. We used to have live music in those days, and they were on the dance floor. And this is true because in American Way magazine, he ever said it himself. So it's true, I guess. Anyway,
what's your favorite thing on the menu?
My favorite thing is the Chubby Chucks, yellow onion and pickles and the hickory sauce and grated cheddar cheese. I just sub the grilled onions.
Those onion rings are massive, though. Everyone talks about the onion rings.
Yeah, the onion rings, it's that's one of our things we're really proud of. But what's funny about them, people really love them. I mean, we have people. I've got a guy coming in from California to eat here on the 20th to get his last taste of the onion rings. And there's some people don't like them. I don't know. It's just one of those things. But the people love them, really love them. You know, I'm real happy to have them. We make them fresh every day.
Any advice for people who are thinking of coming down one last time for the weekend?
Well, I would prefer if you don't have a big party. Try to come with a party of four at the most, because it's real hard to seat large parties. You have to wait a long time if you have a large party. And I would probably suggest coming between, of course, I'm going to say this and then it's going to shoot all that to hell, but between like 3 and 6 in the afternoon would probably be the best time.
That's sort of the lull time typically?
Lately, yes, but who knows.
Who's going to eat the last hamburger?
I haven't thought that far ahead. I don't know. That's a good one. I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I guess we're hoping to have enough food to get us through all day Sunday for our normal business hours, but it's hard. I can't predict. We're selling more burgers now than we've ever had, and we're going to do our best to have one for everybody who wants to come in.
See, but you might run out on Sunday.
It's very possible, yes. I don't know what to predict. I'm going high, and it might even be more than that. So,
anything else, sir?
I just want to thank Austin. It's been fun. It's been a great 38 years.
Thank you so much, Hutch.
All right, no problem. Thank you.
Hutt's Hamburgers on West 6th Street closes Sunday evening forever. That's KUT Weekend for the third weekend of October 2019. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org, or just ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 at KUT.org. ¶¶